From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Tuesday, July 15th. Coming up, we'll bring you a conversation with Illinois Congressman Darren LaHood, and he explains his support for President Trump's tax and spending package. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Illinois is now one of a handful of states taking executive action to evaluate the impact of President Trump's tariffs on the state's economy. Mawa Iqbal reports.
Trump announced last weekend he's levying 30% tariffs against Mexico and the European Union. Governor J.B. Pritzker is now directing state agencies overseeing employment security and commerce to figure out what industries are the most vulnerable to trade disruptions. He's also calling on agencies to assess how the blanket tariffs will impact medical and food supply chains, as well as infrastructure projects. In a statement, Pritzker called the tariff policy reckless. He says the order is meant to give Illinois officials a clear-eyed view of what he calls the Trump slump. According to the governor's office, Illinois is among the top five exporters to Canada and Mexico. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
Homeowners in Illinois covered by State Farm could see a large rate increase. Starting this Friday, customers can see their premiums go up an average of 27%. The Bloomington-based State Farm says it's getting more expensive to rebuild after severe weather events like floods and tornadoes, which are becoming more frequent. Nedra Sims Fears lives in a Southside Chicago neighborhood that experiences a lot of flooding. She says many of her neighbors are already on tight budgets.
It's often really very difficult to afford.
Yeah.
And so it puts people in really terrible situations where they are underinsured when a calamity happens.
In a statement, Governor J.B. Pritzker called the State Farm home insurance rate increases unfair and entirely inconsistent with his administration's own analysis. Tucked into President Trump's big, beautiful bill making 2017 tax cuts permanent is an affordable housing tax credit. Central Illinois Congressman Darren LaHood says it will reduce the high interest and construction materials cost barriers to building new housing.
We'll create 12 to 15,000 new housing units in Illinois in the next 2 years here.
LaHood says in return for the 13 to 14% tax break, developers have to keep rents affordable for 15 years. The Republican lawmaker says that could make a meaningful difference in the McLean County housing shortage. LaHood says the affordable housing tax credit first came about during the Reagan administration, but it has not been reactivated much since then. Hear more from Congressman LaHood about his support of the One Big Beautiful Bill in an interview with Charlie Schlenker. That's coming up in just a few minutes. A former Commonwealth Edison executive convicted of falsifying business records and conspiracy is going to prison for a corruption scheme involving one-time House Speaker Michael Madigan. Dave McKinney has more.
John Hooker once led ComEd's lobbying operation. A federal jury convicted him for his role in illegally influencing Madigan to advance ComEd legislation. Hooker wanted probation, but Judge Manish Shah sentenced him to 18 months behind bars. Shah told Hooker he'd engaged in secretive, sophisticated criminal corruption. Hooker helped orchestrate putting Madigan political workers on lucrative ghost ComEd subcontracts so Madigan didn't have to pay them. Prosecutors said Madigan used ComEd as a personal piggy bank, and Hooker happily joined in the effort. He's the first of four former ComEd executives or lobbyists to be sentenced in the Madigan bribery scheme.
This is Dave McKinney.
Still to come, we'll bring you a conversation with Illinois Congressman Darren LaHood, and he explains his support for President Trump's tax and spending package. That story is coming up next on 217 Today, but first, your forecast. And now a look at your forecast according to the National Weather Service. For today, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m., otherwise partly sunny with a high near 87 degrees, southeast wind 5 to 7 miles per hour. Tonight, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 a.m., otherwise mostly cloudy with a low around 71 degrees, south-southeast wind 3 to 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow on Wednesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 90 degrees, heat index values as high as 100 tomorrow. Southwest wind 5 to 7 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy with a low around 72 degrees. South-southwest wind around 6 miles per hour. And on Thursday, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm after 1 p.m. Otherwise, partly sunny with a high near 84 degrees. West wind 7 to 9 miles per hour.
Next time on The 21st Show, when it comes to the most contentious issues in our politics, what do you know to be true? What are you certain of? Author Alana Redstone says you're probably certain of too much. Her new book, The Certainty Trap, argues we should be questioning ourselves more and judging others less. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on The 21st Show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. Central Illinois Congressman Darren LaHood is praising the Republican tax and spending package he voted for earlier this month. In an interview with reporter Charlie Schlenker, LaHood says the One Big Beautiful Bill puts the U.S. on the right track.
I think you got to fix the economy, and I think this bill goes a long way of doing that. In particular, if you look at the tax cuts that were made permanent in this bill and how they affect agriculture community and the business community, things like making 100% bonus depreciation permanent, the research and development tax credit, making that permanent, the 199A, making that permanent. These are all the estate tax provisions that affect many of our family farmers, making those permanent. Those are, I think, an example of getting the economy back on track. Now, ultimately, we want to bring down inflation, bring down interest rates to make things more affordable, bring down the cost of energy. So there's many things in there that I believe will get the economy back on track.
Fiscal conservatives, though, have noted that the previous tax bill didn't stimulate economic growth anywhere close to the amount needed to pay for itself. How is this different since a lot of the cuts are extensions of the existing provisions?
So I think that's a fair question. If you go back to the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which I supported, I would argue that created the best economy in my lifetime. Now, if you look at the statistics, we moved over that period of time when it passed to right before COVID, we moved 6.5 million people out of poverty across the country. So every economic level benefited. Those aren't my facts. Those are facts that the Department of Treasury put out. Also, we had record high wages, record low unemployment. We had record growth in the economy, and then COVID got in the way and disrupted a lot of that. But making permanent a number of those provisions that expire at the end of this year was part of what we predicated this bill on. We want predictability and certainty in the economy. And then the last point that I'll make, in this bill, we help a lot of working families. No tax on tips, no tax on overtime, no tax on car loans, no tax on Social Security for elderly folks.
You've based your public support for things like cuts to the Agency for International Development, scientific research, and ag research on the idea the budget deficit is unsustainable. Yet the big bill, by all accounts, makes the budget deficit trillions of dollars more. Given your concerns about the deficit, why vote for it?
The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office that scores this bill, they predict there'll be 1.8% growth over the next 10 years. I don't buy into that figure. We've never had that low of growth. We've always had, you know, somewhere between 2 and 3% growth. So we predicate our bill on what we passed on 2.6% growth. We anticipate that will happen. If that happens, none of the numbers that you mentioned will add up on that. Again, go back to the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. CBO also in that, in their analysis of that, said we'd have record low growth. We didn't. We had record growth. So it is predicated on having strong growth, which I think this will do.
That still doesn't get you back to even, though.
Well, I would disagree with that. If you look at our 10-year cuts, we cut $1.5 trillion over 10 years in our budget that we passed last week. That's a record amount of cuts. Now, do I think we could have went further on that? Of course. But this, in the end, was a compromise.
Our listeners have been asking us why you've stated on the record that you're against cuts to Medicaid, but voted for the bill that cuts Medicaid.
I think there's a distinction that needs to be made here. Are we cutting Medicaid? We are. So 1.5 million illegal immigrants that currently get Medicaid are going to be kicked off Medicaid. So that That's a cut, right? We're cutting people off of Medicaid.
That's not a federal cut, though. That's because of the Medicaid penalty to states. Their states are going to be forced to drop coverage for children who are on Medicaid, who are undocumented immigrants. That's no federal savings at all.
Well, it is savings in the sense that that's 1.5 million people that are no longer on Medicaid. Secondly, there's
But it's no benefit to the federal budget.
Well, it cuts back on Medicaid. My point is, I'm admitting that we are cutting Medicaid, but for people that are not citizens of the United States. The other point that I will make is, for Medicaid, if you are a young mother on Medicaid with dependents, your coverage is not going to be affected. If you have a child with developmentally disabilities, an adult or a young child, you're going to keep your Medicaid. If you're a senior citizen on a fixed income, you keep your Medicaid. Now, what is going to change, and whether you call this a cut or not, I think is debatable. But if you're an able-bodied adult, you're in your 20s, 30s, and 40s, you don't have dependents, we're going to transition you into work requirements or getting a job. Today, Charlie, we have 7 million unfilled jobs in the country. And so we're transitioning people that are able-bodied adults off Medicaid into a job. Now, that is a cut. We're cutting back on Medicaid, and that affects 4.8 million able-bodied adults.
The claim from objectors to the cuts, though, is that the adverse impact to people who are eligible will be greater than any savings from reducing fraud mistakes in the system. How do you frame that balancing act?
Well, I wasn't what I referred to on 4.8 million able-bodied adults. That's not waste, fraud, and abuse. That's getting people transitioned into a job. But you know, is there waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid? Of course there is. In every federal program there is.
64% of non-senior, non-disability people on Medicaid, though, already work. And opponents of the cuts are saying the bill will make it too difficult for people to certify eligibility and then recertify when they change jobs, as they do. And that'll prevent people who are eligible from receiving what they need. Please address that argument.
Well, Charlie, what I would say on that, this would be a much different conversation that you and I were having if we were $37 trillion in surplus. We're not. We're $37 trillion in debt. So to think that we're not ever going to touch Medicaid, which has expanded by 50% since COVID, these are taxpayers that are on the hook for Medicaid. We got to figure out how do we reduce our Medicaid population, taking a scalpel approach, not a sledgehammer approach. People, this is a social safety net that the people that need it the most need to have, and that remains intact.
Health advocates say the cuts to Medicaid will not reduce health costs. They'll shift them to emergency rooms and uncompensated care for hospitals, and that the overall cost of insurance then is going to rise as health providers raise their prices to make up for that uncompensated care. Savings for the federal government, increase in the overall cost of health care. How do you address that?
Well, again, I go back to what I said on Medicaid. If we're eliminating 1.5 million illegal immigrants off of Medicaid because they're non-citizens, so if they show up at the emergency room, of course they're going to get treated because it's an emergency room. But that will fall on Medicaid, the Medicaid rolls for doing that, or it'll fall on the hospitals to do that. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't pursue a cutting back on Medicaid for people that are illegal in this country. Secondarily, if you're an able-bodied adult and you show up at the emergency room, you're still going to get treatment even though you're no longer on Medicaid.
But that's going to increase the overall cost of health care.
Again, I think this is a balance on how we try. But again, we can't keep funding Medicaid at the rates that we're doing now because we're $37 trillion in debt.
Many anti-hunger advocates say if fewer families qualify for SNAP, that'll have ripple effects for kids who previously automatically qualified for free school meals or summer food programs. Since the federal government is reducing its efforts to deal with hunger, who should pick up that slack?
Since COVID, we've expanded SNAP and our nutrition programs by up to 50% of more government spending. Now that the economy is getting back on track and we're out of the COVID window, we were a couple years ago, we got to put in place provisions that cut back on our spending. And SNAP is one of those. Again, I go back to if you're an able-bodied adult and you don't have dependents, we want to get you into a job with 7 million unfilled jobs in the country. So work requirements, transitioning, our social safety net, it should be a trampoline and not a hammock.
That was Republican Congressman Darren LaHood. He spoke with Charlie Schlenker. LaHood says he's considering a run for the U.S. Senate seat that will open when Senator Dick Durbin retires. That's it for today. 2 and 7 Today is produced by Stephanie Oriana. Reporting today contributed by Mawa Iqbal, Charlie Schlenker, and Dave McKinney. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 2 and 7 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.